The Miami Hurricanes lost a tough one to Florida State, 20-19. David, I'm curious. I know you've had a chance to go back and watch the film and kind of go back through it. And I've watched part of it. I haven't had time to go through all of it, and I'll get to that this week. But I guess just, you know, your initial reaction to maybe what you saw during the game, and maybe we can get more into it. But just, I guess, just your initial reaction to what happened there against Florida State.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a tough way to lose like that at the end, having an extra point block. I think really where the game was won and lost, I think, was in the second half on the line of scrimmage. I thought in the second half, Florida State's defensive line kind of took the game over and dominated Miami's offensive line. And on the other side of the ball, I think in the first half, Miami's defensive line had a nice showing against Florida State on the line of scrimmage. But then in the second half, I don't know if it was due to fatigue or just Florida State changed some things that they were doing. But the defensive line wasn't quite as effective in the second half. So, you know, Florida State just controlled it in the second half and chipped away and made the most of Brad Kaya's mistake, interception in the end zone. And, you know, when they got the ball, they hit a big play for a touchdown. So, I mean, really, that's what I saw when I watched the game. Just on the line of scrimmage, Florida State was the better team.
One thing after the game, I know you were there for the post-game press conference. I asked Rashawn Jenkins maybe what kind of went wrong or what happened there in the third quarter, because Miami leads and they give up two touchdowns and Florida State goes for over 160 total yards in that quarter, and that's where the game turned. And one thing that stood out to me, you know, I asked Korn the same question and, you know, he just said, oh, they made plays. But Rashawn said something interesting where he said, you know, Jimbo Fisher, and he credited him. He said Jimbo came out and made adjustments, and Jimbo's been, he said he's been nice at doing that. And you look, and DeAndre Francois goes 10 for 11 in passing, and Rashawn mentioned that they were throwing a lot more to the boundary. And I think that was interesting, too, just that adjustments were made at halftime from Florida State standpoint. And they obviously seemed to work, and they got the two big touchdowns, and obviously Dalvin broke one off and finally, you know, got in the end zone. So I thought that was interesting. You mentioned the defensive line. David, and clearly they've shown ability these first few games, four games, and then Florida State, you know, it was definitely a step up in talent with what they were facing. Definitely good to see that they were in the game and they weren't run over or anything like that.
Yeah, they played well.
And I think that there was so much of that, David. We talked about, we don't know, I mean, we have our opinions on what things are, but I think in a game like this, you kind of saw each unit for better or for worse. And I think, yeah, you mentioned defensive line held up pretty well for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I think the defense played well. I mean, I think it's a pretty nice accomplishment holding this Florida State team to 20 points. And I think when you do that, you know, you can say the defense played well enough to win the game. Because I think this Florida State, I think their offense is pretty explosive, Chris. I mean, I don't know what their points per game average was coming into the game, but it's certainly a lot more than 20 points.
Yeah, and definitely. And we talked about that, David. I mean, we talked so much. I know some people got a little tired of some of the things we said that we saw in Florida State coming into the game in terms of their explosive offensive ability, but they have it. It's there. They're going to put up big numbers against opponents, and I think you'll see the second half of the season, I think you'll see them do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think Miami's defense played well. I mean, of course, you would like to see the play where you know, Dalvin Cook's 59-yard touchdown reception. You would like to see that not happen. But Florida State just has those kind of playmakers where those plays are going to happen. And really, I mean, this game, they didn't happen often. I think Miami contained Florida State pretty well. Florida State certainly had some short third down opportunities that they did convert. But also, I mean, Miami did get off the field on some third and shorts, too. So I think overall, if you're a Miami fan, you got to be pleased about what you saw from the defense and also just kind of the future of the defense, particularly on the front seven. I mean, all those guys will probably be back next year, and they should continue to improve.
David, you mentioned third down. I know we've had a conversation already about this, but can you talk about what you noticed with third downs? Again, going back to the film and tell people what you saw with that, and because it's kind of a glaring stat to me when you pointed it out.
Yeah, so I went back because during the game, it just seemed like the whole game, Florida State was third and short, Miami was third and long. So I really went back and looked at it, and the average third down for Florida State was third and five. The average third down for Miami was third and nine. And within that, I think Florida State had 17 third down opportunities, and eight of them were third and 1 yard or third and 2 yard. And then for the whole game, Miami only had two of those two situations where it was less than 5 yards. So, what do you take from that? Number one, Miami could not establish the run on first and second down. And they just weren't efficient, period, because obviously they were throwing the ball a lot too on first and second down, and they weren't getting completions. So Florida State was the much more efficient offense. And I think it showed up particularly in the second half when, they certainly did wear down the Miami defense, I think, in certain points, and the time of possession certainly plays out in Florida State's favor too. So, third down is obviously a key down, and Florida State definitely did a better job of making those third down situations manageable.
David, you mentioned, things we saw in the second half. I think it just kind of reminds me, or I always say this, I make a big point of emphasis whenever we talk about either big games or potential upsets or whatnot. The game of football, maybe sports in general, but just particularly with football, the game is just so long. Like you really have to be clicking for, it's not a cliche, the four quarter thing. I mean, games are very long and you can't just do it in spots. It has to be consistent. And typically more times than not, especially in a one game situation, cream rises to the top. So maybe issues you saw early on kind of manifest and eventually, become bigger issues. And I think there was one thing, it was 13-3 at halftime after Florida State gets the field goal late. But Florida State, I think maybe people would be surprised because it felt like Miami was just dominating and doing well that first half. You had to feel good. You had the home crowd and everything. But it was 13-3 Miami, but Florida State had three more total yards on offense. And I thought that was something like as bad as they've looked or not cohesive or clicking, they still had more total yards than Miami. And to me, that was kind of a red flag. Like, this isn't good in the sense of, again, it felt like it was good from Miami's standpoint. And certainly Florida State eventually broke through there in the third quarter.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, in the first half, Dalvin had that long run over 50 yards, and Cornelder did a good job of coming across the field and kind of catching him and saving a touchdown. And on that drive, Miami ended up getting off the field when their backup quarterback, Sean McGuire, threw an interception. So, that was certainly an opportunity, a scoring chance that Miami took away. And then, in the second half, we saw Florida State do that same thing to Miami. Miami had the ball in the red zone, and Brad Kaya threw an inexplicable pick. I mean, it was a terrible decision to throw that ball. And really, when you look back at the game, that was a game-changing play. Changed the momentum of the game. And yeah, I mean, you could point to that play saying, "This is where the game changed. This is why Miami." Because if Miami gets a touchdown there, you could argue it's over, Chris.
Yeah, definitely. You talk about momentum. You go up 20-3. You had scored late in the first half, so it felt like things were just going to go keep going well for Miami if you get a touchdown there. And David, we talked so much about with Brad and things, things that he's not been great at Miami. And one of them I always talk about is what he does inside the red zone. I don't like that he hasn't been efficient enough, particularly throwing into the end zone for touchdowns. That's just been something I just don't think he's done enough of that at Miami. I think that's one of the reasons why they struggle in the red zone over the years. And that was a perfect example of just I mean, clearly a bad decision, but just not enough confidence or making right decisions to throw great passes in there. Now, certainly when I say that, I know what happened at the end of the game. It was a fantastic throw to Stacy Coley for a touchdown into the end zone on a fourth down, game on the line. Like, I understand that. I just don't think it's been consistent enough for him. And certainly when you have plays that don't work out in your favor, you can't have turnovers inside the red zone, let alone, if you're settling for field goals, that's another thing. But yeah, clearly, it felt like it during the game where the game turned and you know how every play matters and momentum and the whole thing and Florida State starts to get going. And I don't know, it felt, and I understand the criticism with Brad now and or maybe it's slowly coming up. Just
Overall, how well do you think Brad played?
not good enough. David, just not good enough. That's simply put. You know, I had a conversation with somebody earlier today about that, and if you just want to narrow it down to one thing, I just don't think he was good enough. There are certain reasons. I think the offensive line, we know that is an issue. There's no question, particularly on the outside at the tackle position. But I still think, at some point you got to turn the corner. At some point you have to beat a Florida State. At some point you have to win these games. You have 12 losses coming into the year as a starter. You know, at some point, let's get going. And he's got more opportunities, and I hope people understand that. And I know everyone's frustrated, but, if he finishes out strong, if the team finishes out strong, yes, it's disappointing to lose this game, but he'll be measured. The team will be measured. You know, Mark Richt and company will be measured how they finish the season, not necessarily for this one game. You can look back and say, oh, this is disappointing not to have to lose by one and you have an extra point blocked. I mean, every team has these kind of games throughout the year typically. It just can't snowball into more and more bad plays or more interceptions in the end zone and these kind of things. So he has to bounce back. But in this particular game, I thought DeAndre Francois, the third, the freshman, I thought he outplayed Brad, and he battled and you just can't see that. You don't want to see that at home. And again, at some point, Brad's going to have to turn the corner and make plays and complete passes. And David, I know you mentioned you saw some drops out there, and certainly we did. It's just you expect so much, not just Brad because of what people say about the draft or anything like that. It's just starting quarterback at Miami, or starting quarterback. I that's how I view it and have viewed it. And, not looking at necessarily of this guy's whatever people have him in the draft. I just think as a starting quarterback at Miami, he has to be better. They have to win games, and he's a junior now, and there's not many quarterbacks out there that get to have, this is a third year starter, and you remember back in the days, Miami typically only had 2 years to start, and that was about it, just because of the turnover, and that's just how it typically works. So he has plenty of experience, and some of these mistakes that we've seen have looked like someone that doesn't have the experience.
Overall, what did you think of the offensive game plan? Because clearly, Mark Richt did not trust his offensive line to give Brad time for longer developing passing plays. There was a lot of quick, short passing plays, a lot of run-pass option plays where, Brad Kaya held the ball a lot and tried to flick it out there quick. And I guess just overall, what did you think of what Miami was trying to do out there offensively?
I mean, you clearly understood it. And I know, look, Mark Richt has been criticized at Georgia for being a conservative head coach. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. And I don't want to, typically when you hear that word, I think people get, they just don't like to hear that word when it comes to sports or football and whatever. But you understand why he's conservative. And I think you could still be successful if that's his style. And yeah. I just thought it was interesting, David. We talked so much about what Florida State struggled with going into the game. Their secondary had been giving up big plays, and I just don't think Miami put enough pressure on their secondary, either with creative routes. I don't think the tight ends were utilized enough. I thought the running game, whatever they felt like with the running game, it was still a strength of theirs going into the season. They had shown that every running back on the team, all four of them, were averaging over 7 yards a carry. Granted, the competition wasn't great, but they had success, and it seemed like that was becoming their identity. Go double tight end, stack the line, just a couple receivers out there, which is typically we saw at Georgia, and just run the ball up the middle. And I just thought they would have tried to stick to what has worked for them and kind of their identity. And it was interesting after the game, asking Richt about that and with the running game, especially because, David, you saw it, and, they didn't run the ball the first two series. And would he have liked to have gotten it going early? And he thought the run-pass option, like you mentioned, that they could have – maybe there were times that they could have ran the ball during those times. And I thought it was interesting. I we didn't talk about it, but I was curious what you thought about Mark Walton's response when I asked him about, what did he see from the running game, not just himself, but Joe and just the whole collection. And he just said that he was real short and just said, we took what the defense gave us. And I didn't know if you want to read into that. Was he, you think he was frustrated they didn't get more opportunities or?
Yeah, I think he did. I think he was. I mean, I would say too, yes, I would have liked to see more of the kind of power eye, two tight end, fullback look out of Miami this week, but I do think Richt knows that when they show that look, the passing opportunities maybe aren't going to be there because, you know, Richt knows that Brad Kaya doesn't have the greatest footwork when he works from under center. And also just the offensive line really isn't good enough to pass protect in those situations too. So maybe against a team like Florida State, he feels like, you know, he can't really run that look with this personnel. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of how I read into it.
Yeah, I mean, there were clearly issues with the offense in terms of just the overall production. The yards weren't there, and eventually it got to a point where they needed a touchdown. You know, they were stuck at 13 for so long, and they eventually, I mean, they got the big punt return from Braxton, which
I think we saw
too.
Like, I think we saw, you know, when Brad did challenge the FSU secondary with some vertical looks, you know, they're pretty much all to Stacy. But when he did challenge the secondary, there was opportunities there. I mean, Stacy caught one for a touchdown. The one at the end of the game was a nice little throw into space where you know, Stacy did a spin move and got open. And then, you know, there was other passes outside the numbers deep that one was just off Stacy's fingertips and one was like a miscommunication between Stacy and Brad, but certainly Stacy was open and could have made a one-on-one play. So yeah, I mean, I don't understand, I guess, why more of those shots weren't taken, maybe with some of the other receivers on the team too, because I think only four guys caught passes in the game. Maybe I have that wrong. Five. So
I have it here, right here. So yeah, Coley with 7, Richards 4, then Walton 3, Njoku 3, Herndon 1, Berrios 1. So of the receivers, only 12 receptions from the receivers.
And I did think. I mean, they did call some screenplays to Walton, and I did think those were pretty effective. I you know, maybe throw one or two more of those in a game, but. Yeah, I mean, I don't think the passing game game plan was aggressive enough this week.
David, with that, with the tight ends, we've kind of mentioned it. I know we've had conversations about this. So in this game, Njoku and Herndon, you know, 4 catches, 28 yards, and, you know, just nothing real big. Longest catch was 11. What are you seeing with the tight ends? Because I know coming into the year, we felt so strongly that they could utilize both, especially Njoku with his speed, and you've seen it in bursts. You saw it with Herndon already this season. Just what do you see in this game? Just in general,
yeah.
Though, do you think they're being utilized enough?
No, I don't think.
What can they do to get them more involved?
I don't think they're being used right. I think, you know, we're mainly seeing them being used in like underneath stuff or stuff on the edges, try and get them in space a little bit because they can run, you know, for tight ends, they run well after the catch. But my main issue is I don't understand why they're not having them work the middle of the field more. Because once Njoku gets a nice head of steam on him, he's very hard to cover for linebackers and safeties. And Brad Kaya has shown in the past he likes work in the middle of the field. He likes throwing to tight ends in the middle of the field. You know, Clive Walford and him had a pretty nice connection doing that. So, yeah, I mean, I don't understand because I think in a lot of the RPOs, too, they were giving Njoku some looks in those swing passes. And yeah, he's athletic for a tight end and can run well for a tight end, but it's not like he's a short, quick, shifty slot receiver that can accelerate well in space and make plays in those situations. So I just moving forward, I hope to see them used more, you know, like a traditional tight end, I guess.
Yeah. And I the crossing routes with the, both of those guys, especially Njoku, you get him running on a crossing route and then throw him the ball where he already has his head of steam rather than these, you know, short passes and expect him to do a stiff arm and get upfield that, you know, his acceleration for, I mean, he's still a tight end, even if you like his athleticism. I think that's tougher to get big plays but it can be used, you know, go sit in the zone and turn and catch, you know, those kind of things in the middle of the field. I thought it was interesting, and I don't know, I'd have to check my note. I don't know if we'd seen it too often this year, but I saw him both split out wide at receiver At one play. You know, I saw that and I thought that was interesting. I just don't think they I don't think they utilize it enough or were creative enough to get those guys the ball or to have them be decoys enough to free up bigger plays for the other guys. Like you said, the receivers, you know, 12 catches between three guys. You would like to see that number go up. Conversely, Florida State receivers had 17 catches of the 21 that they had. So I just think you'd like to get them the ball. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just something that the staff is still trying to figure out exactly what they have and the best way to utilize guys. And quite frankly, David, we talked so much about it, but this was a major step up this game compared to the first four. So now that this is under their belt and we've talked so much, just, you know, it can't be. You know, this can't just be one. You know, this can only be one loss in the sense that, you know, you can't let this linger. And you know, and I think everyone can understand and be disappointed if it's just this one loss, but you move, you grow on from it. I'm very curious to see how guys react because obviously they've not won at a high level in recent years at UM. So you wonder how it's gonna be with this new staff. Are they gonna, I don't know, are they gonna sulk or are they gonna actually go for it, you know, and we'll see. And clearly these next two tests are going to be tough and make a big difference in their season with the Coastal Division, with North Carolina and Virginia Tech.
I want to ask you about the offensive line. We touched on it, but they had a terrible game. I guess moving forward, what can Miami do, if anything? And I guess just in general, too, moving forward, does it matter? Is Miami going to see a defensive front as talented, as good as Florida State's, that will test Miami's offensive line like it was tested on Saturday?
Well, I think some of the I've already started some of the ACC games, you know, watching them and charting stuff, you know, for down the road, and they might not be as talented as Florida State's, but there's guys that they're ACC caliber. There's guys that can make plays and give teams trouble. It's not like a Clemson or something like that from years ago and or last year, but I think the thing, you know, and maybe this is why you saw Brad go under center or go in shotgun so often last year was just it's the same kind of guys, and to give them that extra cushion of space and time, give them an extra time. So
No doubt.
maybe I'm not saying scratch the whole playbook, but maybe they stop fighting with the under center stuff. If that is too much of an issue, and we've seen this in years past, particularly I remember with Brock Berlin, that was such a big deal. I mean, we had this controversy with Ja'Cory even also under center and whatnot, but I just wonder if that's going to be an adjustment that they just feel like they have to make, because it's not as simple as, oh, let's just get the second string guys up and going and we'll just give them, well, the second unit isn't very good either. So it's not like they just have guys waiting around waiting for their opportunity. I haven't seen enough from those guys either in practice or games or even before they got to UM to make me believe that they should be in there. So it's not like a quick fix, an easy thing. It's not like you can just shift guys around and get guys out and put other guys in. I don't think that's how you can fix it. So it's going to be interesting. I don't know if you just, again, maybe you stack the line a little bit more, you leave the tight ends to block a little bit, but that's disappointing because we talk so much about how they need to be used in the passing game. So it's definitely a challenge moving ahead. What are your thoughts? Do you have a quick fix there for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have seen Richt kind of identify that weakness already this season. And I do feel like, you know, against the teams that weren't as good, like FAMU and Florida Atlantic, we saw Brad work more under center in terms of the play action passing game. Richt wanted to see how that would look against those teams. And it wasn't exactly smooth then. And I think as we've seen the competition step up, they've just gone more to a shotgun look, more RPOs, rather than, you know, the under center thing that Richt wants to do. So I think we've already seen that adjustment. But yeah, I mean, really, at this point, the personnel kind of is what it is. And so I don't know what Miami does to fix it other than try and coach the guys up that they have now, and kind of hope. Like I said, like I alluded to earlier, they got to kind of hope that they don't face a front that's as good as Florida State's. So it's just going to be an issue all season, I think, and they just got to find a way to hide it.
And it wasn't a surprise. I mean, this is what we expected. This is one of the weaknesses coming into the year. You know, and I think what kind of frustrates people too with it, and and what makes it difficult is these guys do have experience. So you're hoping that they get better or they gel together and, you know, that kind of thing. That's what you're just hoping that it just clicks, but, you just haven't seen it. And it's disappointing because it shows up in these kind of games. And, it really does throw off the timing, of your offense.
Yeah.
Because then you're stuck where you feel like, well, we can't run the ball and we can't throw the ball and we can't do all these things. We can't do play action pass because, you know, long developing plays. And, you know, there's all these things that it prevents you from doing. But they're going to have to figure it out. And you know, certain other teams around the country deal with it too. You know, offensive line play in general is such a big issue. And it's going to have to be something they correct and fix in recruiting with. In particular, they've got to get true tackles into the program that are big-time guys. And really, that's what's so unique with where they're at. I mean, you typically always want to start with tackles and then move them inside, you know, if you have to. It doesn't work the other way where you get guards, guys that look like guards should be guards, and then try to move them outside. And I just don't think that works. And so it's definitely a challenge for the staff to bring tackles in. And I don't know if it's something where they go the JUCO route and try to find something there. Just for immediate help next year, because I don't know how long they can wait. And we talked about the second, third unit on the team. You just don't see a lot of promising prospects on the squad right now.
How about the defense? Is there a player you could single out as being a guy who, you know, impressed you against Florida State?
Well, Cornelder, I mean, David, I mean, he was making plays and, you know, that pass deflection where he's tracking back and deflects a pass, you know, just moving around, being versatile there, pretty good against the run as well and run support. So he was a guy that stepped up to me. I was impressed with him. You know, obviously with the stuff that you saw from Kendrick Norton, particularly early in the game, you really liked that. Just that, you know, you're starting to see signs of a defensive tackle really commanding respect, earning respect. And he almost knocked out the quarterback for the game. I mean, really, that would have been a game changer. And it felt like it was because McGuire comes in and he looked out of place. And I think Miami fans were all excited about that. And then eventually DeAndre gets back in there and takes some other hits and battles through it. But, yeah, I mean, it was almost a big play. But, yeah, I think Kendrick, you know, David, I still like what I see from Jaquan Johnson. I like, and that was what we expected. We thought that he would play more as opposed to the third linebacker spot. And I mentioned something on Twitter during the game. Hey, watch out for Jaquan this game. And that was the reason, is because I thought they would go more with him, more nickel situations, more 4-2-5 looks as opposed to just straight 4-3 and that third linebacker. So he stepped up and made a nice pick. And you like to see that anytime guys make big plays in big games, you like that for just for everything about him. It adds to their resume, their confidence, and it gives you hope moving forward.
Yeah, and Jaquan also, he made a huge play right before the half when Florida State was knocking on the door. They ended up getting a field goal right before half. But during that drive, Dalvin had a nice little run that it was one man away from being a touchdown, and that one man who prevented it was Jaquan making a very nice tackle in space on Dalvin. And I feel like in past years, that tackle wouldn't have been made, and Dalvin would have scored a touchdown on that play. So I'm with you. Jaquan definitely had a big time game. And, you know, with Jamal Carter probably being out for the first half this week, Jaquan's going to get an even bigger role with the defense this week. So, yeah, he definitely stepped up, and I was happy to see the way he played. I think, too, I do think Michael Pinckney played a nice game, particularly in the second half. He started making some plays and looked comfortable out there. And, you know, I want to highlight, too, I mean, Demetrius Jackson, he did miss the tackle on Dalvin on the long touchdown run, but he played well overall in the game. He had two huge pass breakups on plays that it would have been big gains if that ball gets by him. So, yeah, I mean, I do like what Demetrius is doing this year. He stepped up big time.
Yes, I think. Is there anyone else in particular, David, that kind of stood out to you? Maybe just a guy that we haven't talked much about that before we wrap this thing up here.
Honestly, I liked what Joe Jackson flashed during the game. He had a nice little sack. I think in the first half, I forget exactly when it was, like a half a sack. But it was he beat Roderick Johnson, Florida State's stud left tackle, who's probably going to be a first round pick in the NFL. He beat him and got to the quarterback, and then in the second half, I think he did a nice job setting the edge. He's definitely a skinny guy out there. He's definitely looks like a freshman, but he's definitely flashing some big time ability, and I think his ceiling is very high.
One thing before we go here, you asked me about Brad Kaya. What I didn't ask you, what are your thoughts on Brad? What you saw, and maybe just a general overview with him in general, and particularly moving forward. Just your thoughts on him before we get out of here.
I mean, my opinion is, look, Florida State Miami games always come down to which team is going to make plays in the fourth quarter, right? So Miami, all of Miami's big wins against Florida State are close wins, and generally the quarterback makes plays in the fourth quarter to put his team in position to win the game. And Brad didn't, I mean, yes, Brad made the game tying, potential game tying touchdown late in the fourth quarter. But overall, in the second half, it seemed like, honestly, I might be reading too much into this, but it seemed like after he threw that interception, it messed his head up pretty bad. And, he didn't seem to have as much confidence as he normally does. And it just seemed like the air went out of the building, so to speak, after that play. And I don't think Brad ever really got the energy back until, the Braxton Berrios punt return that put Miami in a very good position to score a touchdown. So, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. It wasn't good enough from Brad. I just generally, I would have liked to see more from him in that game, because I think it was very winnable. Like I said, the defense did everything they could to give Miami a chance to win that game, and it was winnable for Miami. But Brad and the offense just didn't get it done in my mind.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, it's tough on the because you heard the seniors talk about how much they wanted to win this game, and it's just tough. And maybe it is a little bit with Brad. Brad knows he hadn't beaten Florida State. It just they really want to win this game, so it didn't happen. You move on as quickly as you
Yeah,
can, and
there's still
we'll see.
plenty to
And
play
I hope
for.
the fans are still excited about the season, just because. Hopefully it does still have a positive feeling for everyone, especially compared to years past, and where at least from my standpoint, it just never felt like there was real hope that things were going to go well for them, for various reasons. But hopefully people are still, I know it's tough to be excited, especially when we're talking about this loss and this podcast here, but hopefully people are still excited and
I mean, look, these next two games, you could argue, are bigger than the Florida State game because they're Coastal Division games. These next two games will probably decide who wins the Coastal Division, which, obviously Miami's never done. And so it's a tough task, tall order. But if Miami goes out and beats North Carolina and Virginia Tech, this season could still be an excellent season for this team.
Well, there you go. So we'll wrap this up. We'll do a North Carolina preview closer to the game. But we wanted to knock this podcast out for you guys. Thanks for listening, David. Good talking to you. We'll definitely have a bunch of stuff on the site this week. And we'll talk to you guys later.
All right, thanks.